fans, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. Egyptian football star Mohamed Salah is in Spain for treatment of a shoulder injury. The 25-year-old Liverpool striker refused to answer questions by reporters upon his arrival at Valencia Airport. There's concern about Salah's fitness as the Pharaohs of Egypt prepare for their first World Cup appearance in 28 years. As Samson Omale reported during Monday's show, Salah was injured during the recent UEFA Champions League final in Kiev, Ukraine.
Liverpool talisman and reigning CAF African Footballer of the Year, Egypt's Mohamed Salah, who has received a boost to his hopes of making next month's World Cup after the Egyptian FA claimed the injury picked up in his side's Champions League final loss to Real Madrid is merely a sprained shoulder. The Red Star was forced off the field through injury after just 30 minutes following a robust challenge from Real Madrid veteran Sergio Ramos, and initial reports suggested that Salah will miss next month's World Cup. However, the Egyptian FA are believed to be more optimistic over the injury, claiming that the damage is just a sprain which could be healed in just 2 weeks. His coach Jurgen Klopp differs with Egyptian FA when he told reporters after the UEFA Champions League loss on Saturday night that Mohamed Salah's injury could be serious after all.
There's something with the shoulder, obviously. So you can imagine he would have played on if anything is possible. So I didn't see him. I'm not sure, but maybe he's in the hospital at the moment for X-ray. That doesn't look good.
Liverpool manager Jurgen Klopp. And thanks to Samson Omale for that report. The World Cup-bound Pharaohs of Egypt have scheduled friendly warm-up matches against Colombia on Friday and Belgium on June 6th. The Egyptians are in Group A at the World Cup, along with Saudi Arabia, Uruguay, and host Russia. The Pharaohs will face Uruguay June 15th in the opening World Cup match for both teams. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Now let's go to Yokohama, the venue for the 2002 World Cup final, where World Cup-bound Japan lost to Ghana Wednesday 2-0 in an international friendly match. The Black Stars of Ghana took the lead after 9 minutes on a free kick from Atletico Madrid's Thomas Partey, and Emmanuel Boateng got Ghana's second goal on a penalty kick in the 51st minute. It was a rainy night in Yokohama, and the results certainly dampened the debut of Akira Nishino in his first game as Japan's manager. The Japanese will continue their World Cup preparations with upcoming friendly matches against Switzerland and Paraguay. The Japanese play their first World Cup Group H match June 19th against Colombia. Senegal and Poland are also in Group H. In more World Cup news, the French national football team posed for an official photo on Wednesday at their national training center outside Paris. The French squad defeated visiting Ireland on Monday 2-0 in a friendly international match. Olivier Giroud and Nabil Fekir scored first-half goals for the French, who lifted the World Cup trophy on home soil 20 years ago. France has two friendly matches remaining, one against Italy and the other against the United States, before they leave for Russia and the 2018 World Cup. The French are in Group C in Russia, along with Australia, Peru, and Denmark. Julien Pretot is a sports reporter who follows the French team from Paris.
Well, the strength of this team is definitely the attacking players, attacking midfielders and forwards and strikers, which is in sharp contrast to the team who won, I mean, the squad who won the 1919 World Cup when Aimé Jacquet's, you know, squad was built around a strong defense and strong defensive midfielder. And this year it's going to be all about, you know, the offensive players like Antoine Griezmann or Kylian Mbappe. who've been like really impressive lately.
While Mbappe and Griezmann have been really impressive lately, sports reporter Julian Pertot says there are question marks about the French team's defense.
Well, the two central defenders, the two center backs, Samuel Umtiti of Barcelona and Rafael Varane of Real Madrid, they've been struggling this season. They haven't been as good as they should have been. And if you had to add the fact that Laurent Koscielny, who's been like a cornerstone of this defense, has been ruled out, injured, it limits, you know, Didier Deschamps' options, you know, in central defense. And then you've got also the problem of the fullbacks with Djibril Sidibé of Monaco, who's been injured, he's got a long-term injury. He's just coming back, but he might not be, you know, like fully fit, you know, when the competition starts. So it's kind of a shaky defense that they're going to start the World Cup with.
That's sports reporter Julian Pretot commenting on France's World Cup-bound football team. And he was speaking in Paris. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Joining us now with an update on the French Open tennis tournament is my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. In French Open tennis action Wednesday, Serbian star Novak Djokovic defeated Jaume Munar of Spain 7-6, 6-4, 6-4. The Joker next plays in a matchup against Roberto Bautista Agut, also of Spain, on Friday. On Tuesday, American tennis great Serena Williams saluted the crowd at Roland Garros after defeating Kristina Pliskova of the Czech Republic in straight sets, 7-6, 6-4. Serena is back in Grand Slam action after giving birth to a baby girl last September. Her last Grand Slam appearance was at the Australian Open in 2017, which she won while pregnant with her daughter. After Tuesday's match, Serena said her efforts to get back to top form are paying off.
I feel like I'm on the right track. You know, I've been putting a lot of work in on the court, off the court, on the court, on the court, off the court. So that's kind of been my life, and I've been really enjoying it. And hopefully the results continue to show.
And Serena says her goal is to keep getting better.
You know me, I really feel like I can improve on literally everything. And that's the great thing, as I feel like I can improve and there's room for improvement. And that means I can get better. So I'm really excited that I'm playing again and I'm getting to that level. And there's so much room for improvement in my game.
The three-time French Open champion will face 17th seed Ashley Barty of Australia on Thursday. Tuesday was also a good day for Rafael Nadal. He won his match against Italy's Simone Bolelli in straight sets, 6-4, 6-3, 7-6. After the match, Rafa spoke to reporters and gave his respect to his opponent.
Good. It was a good match. It was a difficult match because he played so aggressive and very well, I think. And I resisted, you know, always difficult to play against a player that wants to hit every ball so hard and even more if it's the first round. So he played well, I think, so well, playing with a lot of risk, but having success in with all the risk that he take it. Yeah, I played a match that I have to play more aggressive, I know. But it was difficult today to play so aggressive, being in the first round and against a player who really came on court, decided to play that strong.
Rafa, who is affectionately known as the King of Clay, was asked if his past achievements on his favorite surface could lead to complacency.
That's not going to happen, you know. And there is a proof that that's never happened, that I won 10 times here, 11 Monte Carlo, 11 Barcelona, 8 Roms. If you get complacent or too confident with yourself, for sure that's not going to happen. So I was able to do all these results because I respect the sport, I respect every opponent, and I respect the competition every day.
Rafa's next match will be played on Thursday against Guido Pella of Argentina. As you may know, Rafa has won the French Open 10 times. But did you know he's won it four more times than any other player in the Open era? Swedish former world number one Bjorn Borg has claimed the title six times. Here are a few more French Open fun facts you may not know. On the men's side, Bjorn Borg, Rafael Nadal, and Ilie Stasi of Romania have each won the tournament without losing a single set. Number one seeds Novak Djokovic, Rafael Nadal, and Gustavo Kuerten of Brazil have each won the tournament four times in the last 25 years. American Michael Chang is the youngest winner of the French Open, winning in 1989 at the age of 17. And Yannick Noah is the last Frenchman to win at Roland Garros, claiming the title in 1983. On the women's side, Yelena Ostapenko of Latvia became the first non-seeded player to win the women's singles French Open title. She's going for her second consecutive win at this year's tournament. Serena Williams has reached the final in three of her last four appearances at the French Open. She was defeated in the final match in 2016. And American Monica Seles still holds the record as the youngest winner in the Open era. She lifted the trophy at 16 years of age in 1990, her first of three consecutive titles at the French Open. Hey, speaking of fun facts, we're still counting down to the start of the 2018 World Cup. 15 days, folks! And here's a fun fact for 15. A shocking 1-5 scoreline for Emilio Butragueno at the 1986 Mexico World Cup. The striker scored four goals for Spain in the round of 16 match against Denmark and sent his country into the last eight. Years later, Emilio recalled that moment, seemingly still in disbelief, and said, quote, "I scored four goals, which is unheard of and something I'd never envisaged doing in a World Cup. It was more than I ever could have dreamed of." Spain did not emerge as world champions that year. They lost to Belgium in a penalty shootout in the quarterfinals, but Emilio finished as the second highest goal scorer of the tournament. In his career, Emilio made more than 460 appearances for Real Madrid. He retired as a Madrid player in 1995. 15 days! We're getting so close! Back to you, Sonny.
Getting close indeed. Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. And how about another fun World Cup fact for our VOA listeners? With 15 days to the World Cup, 15 also was the number of goals scored by the now-retired Brazilian star Ronaldo at three World Cups: France, 1998, Japan, South Korea, 2002, and Germany, 2006. Now, Ronaldo held the record for most career World Cup goals until July 8th, 2014. That's when Germany's Miroslav Klose scored a record 16th World Cup goal in the 23rd minute during a 7-1 battering of host Brazil. In the semifinals, Germany went on to lift the trophy in Brazil, and Klose announced his retirement from international football 1 month after the World Cup final, in which Germany edged Argentina 1-0 in extra time at the Maracanã Stadium in Rio de Janeiro. Lots of World Cup fun facts. Let's welcome back to the show Mwamoyo Hoops Hamza, the Voice of America's Swahili service chief, who has just returned from a multi-nation trip to Africa. Welcome back, Mwamoyo.
Thank you, Sonny. Glad to be here. I missed the show, you know.
Well, tell our listeners, Mwamoyo, where'd you go in Africa?
Well, I went to the DRC, Democratic Republic of Congo. I went to Uganda, Kenya, and Tanzania. DRC, you know, a big, basketball, you know, fans.
Mutombo!
Because they have produced a lot of, you know, NBA big players. Dikembe Mutombo, Serge Ibaka. On the women's side, you have Madi Mabika, who played with the Los Angeles.
The Sparks. I think it was the Sparks.
Yeah. So NBA is big in the DRC, same way in Tanzania, in Kenya. Yeah, in Uganda, Tanzania produced Hashim Thabit.
That's right. Played for Connecticut, right?
Exactly. Played for Connecticut, went to Memphis, played for Oklahoma City Thunder. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that was the last team he played for. And then now he's playing in China. So same thing in Kenya and in Tanzania. Let me do this shameless plug for the show.
Go for it.
For the show. Okay. Now I'm sitting. Not sitting, I'm standing in a lobby, Hilton Hotel in Nairobi, talking to a couple guys, and somebody approaches me and goes, "You're Momoyo Hamza." I say, "Yeah." I say, "Yeah, man, I hear you on Sunny Side of Sports." I'm like, "Yeah."
So they're hearing us there. So,
we are very big, actually. We are big in East Africa, the VOA, you know, the whole VOA, Sunny Side of Sports. I got a personal plug there, and I was like, I'm going to pass this on to Sunny.
I love it.
I'm going to talk about this on the show. I hope the gentleman is listening right now.
When you were there, Momoyo, did you visit any VOA affiliates in that area of Africa?
That's precisely what I was doing. I was visiting our affiliates, seeing, you know, how they like your product, if there's anything they want us to do differently, they want us to do more, what kind of things, coordination that we can do together, co-production, those kind of things. And, you know, it was a very good trip. I met a lot of people, a lot of talented, you know, radio, TV, you know, guys on the ground, and they're doing wonderful work. And, you know, those are people who we partner with, and, you know, we are doing very well with them.
And I'm guessing they've got more than a few sports fans in that area of Africa.
That's definitely. You know, sports is big in Africa. And speaking of 15 days to the World Cup, you know, the whole world is going to stop during that month. It will be nothing but soccer. You know, so in Africa, that soccer is big. So they're waiting for it.
Well, we're going to make a little room for the NBA Finals, which will be taking place in June, Momoyo.
Let's do that.
Cleveland Cavaliers against the Golden State Warriors. Unprecedented. Fourth year in a row, these teams are going to meet for the trophy. Before we talk about the finals, let's talk a little bit about how they got to the finals. Two tough series.
And it has never happened before, not only in NBA, in all major league sports, no two teams have met four times in a row in the final. So this is rare. This is really something special. Now, as you say, both teams went through seven games to get to the finals. LeBron had 2-7 games.
That's right.
The first series with Indiana, LeBron with Cleveland Cavaliers. So they had to grind themselves into the finals. But finally, now they're here. And, you know, a lot of people think Golden State Warriors will go away with this one. They're just all-time favorites, Cleveland Cavaliers. Even though they have LeBron James, they are clearly overmatched, especially if Kevin Love doesn't play. Because I don't see Cleveland Cavaliers being any different than Houston Rockets, except that LeBron James is better than James Harden. But if he doesn't have Kevin Love, then he's in big trouble. But hey, you know, Ty Lue, that's the Cleveland Cavaliers coach.
The head coach.
When they were going to Game 7 in Boston, this is what he said. He was asked, "What do you bring to Game 7? He said, "I'm bringing the best player in the world." There it is. They're bringing the best player in the world. Can he carry the team through Golden State Warriors? It's like the best player in the world, I guess the best team in the world.
Well, you might say the Golden State Warriors defused the Houston Rockets in seven games. The Rockets leading by, I think it was 11 points at halftime, Momoyo, And then their outside shooting just kind of let him down. Rockets on the verge of making it to the NBA Finals.
And they, the whole season, they were surviving on those outside shooting. But it was apparent that Coach, he was playing only seven players. So those guys were tired. They missed 27 threes in the game. And if you watch closely, most of those threes that they missed, they were offline or they were shot, which means the players were tired by the second half. They couldn't get their feet, you know, on the ground set to shoot a three. That's why they were missing them so much. Now, imagine if they only had made 10 of those 27, we would have been speaking a different game right now.
At the beginning of the show, Momoyo, I was talking about the Egyptian football star Mohamed Salah. Questions about his fitness ahead of the World Cup. He suffered a shoulder injury over the weekend. It's a long international soccer season, and it's a long NBA season. The Rockets were not at full strength for that Game 7, missing Chris Paul.
Chris Paul, a very critical player for their game. I mean, the whole play is, you know, decided by those two guys, Chris Paul and James Harden. Without Chris Paul, of course, they were missing a big part of what their game is all about. So, well, they tried to carry it all, but, you know, as you saw, James Harden had to play the whole game except for a few minutes. And that really hurt them. Right? That really hurt them because they couldn't just overcome, you know, the missing Chris Paul in Game 7 and Game 6, too.
You mentioned Kevin Love earlier, issues that he might have to sit out at least a game or two because of concussion issues. How important is Kevin Love to the Cavaliers winning the trophy?
Extremely important for the Cavaliers because he's the number two player in the team. After LeBron James, you have to go to Kevin Love. And all season we've been talking about Cleveland Cavaliers, the troubles they were having. They were like a dumpster fire, you know. Everything that could go wrong with Cavaliers went wrong. But they managed to get it together. But what you noticed was towards the end of the season, LeBron James and Kevin Love, they finally found a way of playing together. They were really, really having this chemistry. And now if you don't have Kevin Love, James has a lot to carry by himself.
Game 7, LeBron played all 48 minutes against the Celtics, did just about everything on the court. What about those role players?
And as they say in basketball, he nearly messed around and made a triple-double.
But he's going to need some support in the NBA Finals, Memorial. What about players like J.R. Smith?
He's going to need a lot of support. J.R. Smith, he must stop being a streak shooter. He's a very good shooter, you know. So he must stop being that. He has to be on point. Green, who played very well in Game 7, you know, he should come up, you know. Thompson, all the big guys, everybody has to contribute. I mean, if the other players on the team, you know, they play their part, LeBron James won't have to carry the whole team. And this has always been the problem.
What about the Warriors? They go into this series, seven-game victory over the Rockets. You see Steph Curry making a great performance?
Definitely. The only danger with the Golden State Warriors is they could be bored, you know, in one or two games because they're so, you know, so much, you know, overrated and everybody thinks and knows that they're going to win. So what do they bring into the game? Are they going to be sharp as they always be? Or they're still going to wait for the third quarter as they always do. So they have to really be sharp. If they're sharp from the top, you know, throughout the game, I don't think they'll have a problem with Cleveland Cavaliers.
Mwamoyo Hoops Hamza, the VOA Swahili service chief. Thanks for chatting with us, Mwamoyo.
Hey, my pleasure.
And once again, game one in the NBA Finals will be Thursday night in Oakland, California, where the Warriors will host LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers. And that wraps up the May 30th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Sule Terawali. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On May 17th, voters in Burundi went to the polls to decide whether to amend the country's constitution to extend presidential terms from 5 to 7 years. It is widely believed that the amendments will reset previously served terms, allowing President Pierre Nkurunziza to run for 2 more terms in office. Other amendments to the Constitution would expand presidential powers and place restrictions on independent candidates and coalitions of such candidates. Some of these amendments run counter to the power-sharing principles enshrined in the Arusha Agreement, which helped to end Burundi's civil war. According to the Electoral Commission, some 73% of 4.7 million voters supported the constitutional amendments, while 19% voted against. As a result, President Nkurunziza, who first assumed the presidency in 2005, could conceivably rule Burundi until 2034. However, the voting was fraught with problems, said U.S. State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert in a written statement. The United States notes that the referendum process in Burundi was marred by a lack of transparency, the suspension of media outlets, and attempts to pressure voters. The government allowed vigorous campaigning by the opposition during the designated 2-week campaign period, but numerous cases of harassment and repression of referendum opponents in the months preceding the vote contributed to a climate of fear and intimidation. The absence of independent observers also undermines confidence in the reported result. In the months preceding the vote, there were numerous reports of abuse and intimidation. Human Rights Watch issued a report stating it documented violations and abuses by state security forces, intelligence services, members of the ruling party's youth league, the Imbonerakure, and others close to the ruling party in the year and a half leading up to the referendum. We remain concerned that passage of the revised constitution will be interpreted as resetting presidential term limits, wrote Heather Nauert. We recall the ruling party's commitment under the Pretoria Protocol to respect the principles of the Arusha Agreement, including respect for term limits. Media restrictions, arbitrary arrests, and harsh sentences for human rights defenders signal continuing limitations on civic and political space in Burundi. We call on the government to respect its citizens' rights to freedom of expression, assembly, and association, she wrote. The United States supports the Burundian people and hopes for a future in which they enjoy vibrant and sustainable economic growth, security, and fundamental freedoms.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, is it the dawn of a new era in Ethiopian politics? Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed is promising to strengthen democratic reforms and promote unity in the East African nation. Moving forward in Ethiopia, on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
What's up, Africa? I'm Jackson Bungani in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We'd love to have you on board. This is Upfront on the Voice of America.
Listen, we need to discuss what's going on in your communities, issues that affect you.
Are you involved?
Are you engaged in transforming your society?
Today, right now. This is your platform.
Let us know what you've been up to.
Check us out on Facebook. Drop us a line.
It's Upfront Wednesdays at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.